WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. It was a violent night in cities across the country as protesters took to the streets expressing their outrage over the killing of an unarmed black man, George Floyd, by a white Minneapolis police officer Monday. Officer Derek Chauvin was seen on a video kneeling on Floyd's neck for minutes as he said he could not breathe. The protest came hours after Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder. Correspondent Brian Todd was outside the White House last night.
This crowd has been very, very angry and confrontational with the police here. Every time it seems to escalate, the crowd kind of moves back. The crowd seems to be policing itself a little bit here. See, they're trying to get people to back up as the barriers get pushed more toward us, but it has been a real tug of war.
In Atlanta, protesters smashed a window at CNN's headquarters and threw a firework at officers. Hundreds of protesters were arrested in multiple cities, including Houston. And as the violent protests rage, city and state leaders are urging people to cool it.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey reached out early today saying, "Minneapolis, I know you are reeling.
There is no honor in burning down your city. There is no pride in looting local businesses that have become institutions of a neighborhood."
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says he can understand the rage over George Floyd's death, but said the looting and burning going on in the streets is life-threatening, dangerous.
"This is not about George's death. This is not about inequities that were real. This is about chaos."
Nearly 1,700 National Guard soldiers are expected to fan out in the Twin Cities by Sunday. I'm Barbara Cusack.
And the National Guard may be joined by military police. The Pentagon took the rare step of ordering the Army to put several active-duty U.S. military police units on the ready to deploy to Minneapolis. All this is happening as the coronavirus pandemic continues. More than 100,000 people in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia have had COVID-19 since the outbreak started. More than 4,000 people in our region have died from it. Drivers on local D.C. roads will need to slow down starting Monday. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser says the speed limits are being lowered from 25 to 20 miles per hour on those roads.
Surviving accidents is strongly correlated to speed. And lowering the speed limit will help us keep people safe.
But AAA Mid-Atlantic's John Townsend disagrees.
"When you do it in this way, you're actually making the city less safe and more dangerous because nobody will comply with the speed limit."
Bowser says the lower speed limit is permanent. In sports, Major League Baseball teams have released hundreds of young players, with the minor league season in doubt due to the coronavirus pandemic. At least 16 major league franchises will continue to provide allowances to minor league players after the May 31st expiration of Major League Baseball's policy guaranteeing those players $400 a week. Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
It's everything you need to know Sundays on WMAL. Starting at 5 a.m., it's VA Sunday Magazine. At 5:30, hear the Chris McKay Show. At 7, it's Heroes Talk Radio with Dave Ahrens. At 8, it's the Eric Stewart Show pointing you home. Hear the Wise Investor at 9, Dr. Tom Rosell Live at 11, Purity Products at 2, Mortgage Radio at 3, Real Estate Today at 7, and at 9 p.m., it's Lawyer in Your Corner with Ryan Wilson on 105.9 FM WMAL.
I'm Dan Bongino,
and I interview some of the biggest names in politics
on the biggest topics.
President of the United States, President Donald J. Trump. Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us today. It is a great honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dan, and thank you for all of the great things you've said. You are a warrior.
So we got a lot ahead. Welcome to the Dan Bongino Show.
Listen and subscribe to my daily podcast free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You looking for a positive? I've got it. Use your life insurance while you're living. MyTermLifeGuy.com. Look, with everything that we've been through, don't just think about your family. You got to think about you. Term life insurance. Get one that lets you use it while you're living. MyTermLifeGuy.com. It's that simple. MyTermLifeGuy.com. A $1 million policy for a healthy male non-smoker below $35 a month. MyTermLifeGuy.com.
Sponsored by Gold Coast Insurance Group.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In the district, keep in mind that the Suitland Parkway is closed this weekend for road work between South Capitol Street and Firth Sterling Avenue, and that should be in effect until about 7 o'clock this evening. Also, keep in mind that in Laurel, there is a work zone right now on Route 1, Baltimore Avenue, southbound between Main Street and Oak Street. Got the left lane closed through that work zone, so do watch out for that. In Virginia, on 395 southbound, still a work zone between Seminary Road and Duke Street along the right lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Still a touch of humidity out there this morning, but that will really drop off as we head through the afternoon. Plenty of sunshine as high pressure filters in with highs in the lower 80s. Tonight, clear and comfortably cool, lows in the 50s in the outlying suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. Sunny with low humidity for your Sunday, highs in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick. And boy, it's glad to be past the week that was. A lot of heat and a lot of news.
President Trump facing a crisis in race relations in this country. He was criticized for some tweets. He has done his best to clarify those tweets. He spoke with the family of George Floyd, of course, the unarmed African-American who died at the hands of Minneapolis police officers earlier in the week. John, this could be an issue that is critical in the 2020 election.
It certainly is, and I do believe that a president who has made an effort to cultivate black voters on the basis of job creation and revival of the economy now clearly has some problems on his hands. Many in the civil rights community fought the president's language, his use of the word thugs on Twitter, and his response was just part of a pattern that they have seen and not liked, going back to when he said there were fine people on both sides after the march in Charlottesville, Virginia, that was truly racially tinged and full of white supremacists. The president explains these things usually, that that's not what he means, but few in the civil rights community take him at his word. Let's put it this way. The tragic death of George Floyd and the resulting uproar coming out of Minneapolis doesn't help him in his goal of improving on the 7% of the black vote he got in 2016.
President Trump may not be the only one in the 2020 presidential campaign that could be impacted by the events. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota has a history with this officer, John.
And in all likelihood, it is probably going to cost her any chance that she would have of being Joe Biden's running mate. 15 years ago, when she was the Hennepin County District Attorney, Amy Klobuchar was faced with complaints against a number of police officers, none of whom she chose to prosecute. One of them was the now famous, or infamous, Derek Chauvin, who received, in his 19 years in uniform, no less than 10 complaints. Now, of course, he's been fired from the Minneapolis police force and is facing charges of third-degree murder and manslaughter. The world knows Derek Chauvin from the pictures of him having his knee on the throat of George Floyd. In any event, it's not fair to judge someone, I realize, on something that they did 15 years ago that may or may not have led to unfortunate developments today. But that doesn't matter. The black community and leading black Democrats did not want the centrist Klobuchar anyway, and certainly didn't want her a heartbeat away from the presidency. This, in all likelihood, takes her off Joe Biden's short list of running mates, because when one has to explain something repeatedly, fairly or unfairly, it doesn't help Joe Biden. Put another way, it doesn't only have to be right, it has to look right. Not prosecuting Derek Chauvin 15 years ago just doesn't look right in light of the tragic circumstances today.
President Trump held an event at the White House Friday afternoon. It was expected to be a news conference, but he did not take any questions. He called out China for, quote, espionage to steal our industrial secrets, of which there are many. The president also blasting Beijing for passing a national security law that fundamentally undermines Hong Kong's autonomy. The president also said the U.S. would take action on a number of other fronts, including barring certain foreign nationals from China from entering the U.S. and sanctioning officials in China and Hong Kong for their direct or indirect role in smothering Hong Kong's freedoms. A very strong stance taken against China on Friday, John. What does that mean for the president and the United States moving forward?
Well, once again, the punditocracy will conclude this is just one more step toward the new Cold War, this time with the Chinese dragon filling in for the Russian bear. The major part of the president's remarks on Friday that are having everyone interested and waiting for the next development is his threat to impose sanctions against officials in the communist government in Beijing who were involved in the hardline crackdown on Hong Kong. I spoke to Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, one of the leading human rights advocates in Congress, and the father of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, signed into law by President Trump in December of last year. This provides for the listing of officials and personal sanctions directed at them. In other words, a Chinese official who's been involved in gutting freedoms in Hong Kong could not travel to the United States, have a child in school in the United States, nor do any financial transactions in the United States. Congressman Smith wants to go all the way with this one and have the sanctions imposed on Chinese President Xi Jinping himself. He believes that he's guilty on a lot of fronts, not including Taiwan, and definitely including the transmission of faulty details to the World Health Organization regarding the coronavirus. Now, this is interesting. World leaders are technically exempt from the sanctions. Their underlings are sanctioned, but no one goes to the top with them. When Russia seized Crimea under the Obama administration, President Obama and his spokesman repeatedly talked about sanctions against Vladimir Putin and held open the idea of an historic sanction against the Russian head of state. They never did it. Congressman Smith wants to see all precedents broken and Xi Jinping himself sanctioned. I can tell our audience that the congressman was making his views known to the White House, and he has an ally in Mr. Pottinger, the number two man at the National Security Council and the hardliner on China in residence in the White House. We'll see if this happens.
John, Congressman John Ratcliffe was ratified this week as the new Director of National Intelligence. He replaces the acting director, Rick Grenell. First question, does Rick Grenell go back to his ambassadorship to Germany?
Yes, he does, because there is no permanent ambassador and no time to confirm the ambassador. Only the charge d'affaires, the number two person, is minding the store, so he will be back to Berlin.
John Ratcliffe comes in. Now, contrast where you see the role of the Director of National Intelligence and the actions that we've seen from Rick Grenell and that we would anticipate from John Ratcliffe. Contrast that with Dan Coats and the earlier DNI.
I've covered Dan Coats since he was first elected to the House in 1980 and watched him go on to be U.S. Senator, Ambassador to Germany, returning for another term in the Senate, and then finally becoming the Director of National Intelligence. The sad part about Mr. Coats certainly the epitome of intellectual honesty, as much as any politician I've covered, is that he was not in the Trump inner circle. He was not personally close to the president or to people around him in the White House staff. And that is why you would often see the president make statements that he was not up to par on, and said so publicly. It's unfortunate when this happens, and it's unfair. That will not be the case with John Ratcliffe, who does have a good relationship with this president. And I think to watch and judge Ratcliffe as head of DNI, watch what he does regarding the case of retired General Michael Flynn. Rick Grenell began to release records that showed that the FBI did have a greater hand than they let on in the Flynn affair that culminated in his firing from the White House as National Security Council head and his eventual ordeal in court. I do believe we will find more documents revealed, particularly regarding the FBI, and Director Ratcliffe will be a very willing and eager force behind this. I have a feeling General Flynn is waking up this morning and smiling about this appointment.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi and, of course, at Newsmax.com. John, thanks.
Always a pleasure to be here, and we're only a week away from Memorial Day, but let's remember a true American patriot, former Congressman Sam Johnson of Texas, who died at age 89. He was a Vietnam POW for nearly 7 years, earned the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, and other medals, spent 42 months in solitary confinement, and was put in a section of the prison known as Alcatraz for the real malcontents among the American prisoners. And he was the calmest, most soft-spoken gentleman you'd ever want to meet. Sam Johnson, an American hero.
Thank you, John. It's 7:17. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson up next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 395 southbound between Seminary Road and Duke Street, still some road work there along the right lane, not causing any delays. Traveling on westbound 66, look out for some road work in Gainesville near Route 29, headed towards Route 15 in Haymarket in the two right lanes. And in the district, do keep in mind that the Suitland Parkway is closed for weekend road work between South Capitol Street and First Sterling Avenue. Also in the district, do keep in mind there is a work zone on 3rd Street between East Street Northwest and Massachusetts Avenue. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine on this Saturday. We will see falling levels of humidity with dew points back in the 50s by this afternoon. Highs today into the lower 80s. Tonight clear and comfortably cool. Lows in the 50s in the suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. Sunday, more of the same. Sunny with low humidity. Highs cooler in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
67 degrees at 7:18 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Thanks for being with us on the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are joined each week by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the host of Full Measure, and you can catch the show tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7. And Cheryl, first off, thoroughly enjoyed your interview with President Trump last week. You had a full half hour with him. And for anybody that may have missed that, didn't see the show last week, you can see that on Full Measure at fullmeasure.news, correct?
That's right. Still up there.
Yeah. And just one quick thing. Now that we've all seen it, what kind of struck you? What would you say the highlight of the conversation with the president was? Would you have kind of one thing?
Well, he continues to have, even though he has this meandering style of speaking, what I think is a pretty fascinating command over subject matter. And I may have mentioned this before, but sort of in a Clinton-esque kind of way. I don't think we associate Obama and Bush so much as having that kind of level of detail. But, you know, he has a lot of detail, it seems to me, when he's briefed. He is really into the small fine points of these topics that he's briefed about.
And that's not something that we see in these 20-second clips on the evening newscasts, you know, just a soundbite of the president. But, you know, you sat down for, like, the full show with him. So I think it's very interesting. And, again, I would encourage people to check that out at fullmeasure.news. You're posting at your blog at cherylatkison.com this week the transcripts of the phone conversations between General Flynn and the Russian ambassador Kislyak that led to General Flynn's trial, as well as the angles of the Mueller investigation. What strikes you about those transcripts?
Well, it's surprising to me that they've been hidden and kept secret for a couple of years when members of Congress and the press and the public have been trying to see them. There appears to be nothing sensitive in there, at least the current people who declassified it, the new director of national intelligence. They don't think there's anything sensitive. You can read them for yourself. And if this had been out a couple of years ago, it would have been quite helpful because at the time, you remember, Democrats were accusing Donald Trump and General Flynn of being, you know, Putin stooges. And this clearly shows, at least if you take these transcripts at face value, that the Russian ambassador was trying to make a connection so that after Trump was inaugurated, there could be a secure video teleconference between Putin and Trump. So Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, was asking Flynn to arrange that and calling him and saying, have you been able to work on that so that after Trump is inaugurated, these two leaders can talk? Flynn talked with him about fighting Islamic extremist terrorism in the Mideast. Flynn was saying to him, we have a common goal in terms of, you know, making that a priority. I mean, these sorts of things were intercepted, these conversations, by our intel officials. So they knew from the very start when they heard these conversations that there was nothing that suggested some sort of collusion or inappropriate conversation. This is what's done with transition teams and incoming administrations with world leaders. So that's been known since the start, you know, since late 2016, early 2017. Why keep these transcripts hidden? And members of Trump's own administration were part of keeping these hidden until very recently. And one has to ask why.
You have a guest on the program tomorrow who has authored a book and has done extensive research on the entire Russia collusion narrative about the Trump administration. And tell us a little bit about what you're going to talk about.
Well, this is journalist and anchor Greg Jarrett. He's a lawyer as well. And he did a real, probably the deepest dive I've seen into the whole Russia collusion story and what's behind it. He calls it Witch Hunt, his book. So we interviewed him, and he says this is the biggest mass delusion in American history. And, of course, his view is that none of this was justified. And, you know, when his book was published, we didn't even have all the information we have now that seems to verify a lot of the assertions he makes in his book about what we now believe or what's now alleged to be improper behavior, political motivations on the part of high-ranking people inside the FBI to use the apparatus of our intelligence community for political reasons against the campaign and against an incoming president. And Jared lays it out quite well in his book, but also in our interview on Full Measure.
And you've got another story tomorrow about an allegation by the federal government that turned out to be false. It goes back 20 years. Tell us about Stephen Hatfill.
Well, Dr. Stephen Hatfill, if you remember the name, he's a guy, I call him the Richard Jewell of the anthrax attacks. Back in 2001, when somebody mailed these deadly letters containing anthrax to some members of the media and politicians, poor Dr. Hatfill, who is a biodefense weapons expert, who'd worked at Fort Detrick, the Army Infectious Diseases Labs, he'd worked at the National Institutes of Health. For whatever reason, the FBI profiled him and thought he was their man, and kind of, I would say, tortured and harassed him, leaked his name to the press, drained the pond near his house, sort of like what happened with some other raids that we've had, we've learned about. Someone from the FBI leaked that they were going to raid Dr. Hatfill's house, so that was carried live on cable TV when it happened. And in the end, he was cleared. He was exonerated. He'd been wrongly accused. And because of the way they treated him, the government paid him, I think, $4.6 million in a settlement. And the media, including Vanity Fair, had to pay him a multi-million dollar settlement, which really didn't make up for the torture and the damage done to him at the time. But that's not really why I'm talking to him Sunday. I mean, that's certainly an interesting backdrop. But since then, He's gone on to continue his scientific work and become, I would say, a pandemic expert and published on that, including a recent book. So I'm getting his thoughts on what I would say is the current pandemic and pandemics to come. And maybe the biggest takeaway from our conversation on that was he says this current pandemic is not the one we're worried about. And it's just a small taste of what he thinks is yet to come.
Hmm. And now one note, Salt Lake City has gotten a lot of attention in the media for their approach to handling the problems facing the homeless. And you look into that, and what did you find?
Well, it was interesting because they were heralded a couple of years ago on national news and the late night comedy talk shows for having found the solution to homelessness. And the joke kind of was, hey, they were doing what no bright minds have thought of before. They were providing homes for the homeless to get rid of the homeless problem. And, you know, isn't that obvious? Why can't we all do that? But we sent Scott Thuman to Salt Lake City, and he found out it really didn't answer the problem at all. In fact, the Salt Lake City officials told Scott that homelessness there is now worse than it's ever been. And he's going to tell us why they think, you know, their idea, which sounded good at the time, why it didn't work out, and what they're doing, like many other cities, is they try to figure out an answer to this problem.
And that's tomorrow morning, Full Measure, 10 o'clock on ABC7. Cheryl, thank you very, very much, as always.
Thank you.
It's 7:26. It's a Saturday morning update on WMAL, and we are expecting the launch of SpaceX this afternoon. And, you know, Clayton Neville always gets the fun assignments. Clayton, it's good to have you with us this morning.
Rick, good to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Well, first off, this will be the, I guess, first time that we've had a non-NASA launch in a decade or so. And tell us a little bit about the mission itself, the plans for today.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this will be take two with SpaceX and NASA today. Of course, this was attempted on Wednesday, and it couldn't happen because of weather. So back at it again today, and the mission is to get to the International Space Station. And as you said, it'll be the first time that this happens with American astronauts from American soil since 2011, when the space program essentially went away here in the United States. Since then, the U.S. has been taxiing its astronauts up with Russia and paying a pretty penny for it, too, more than $80 million a seat. And because that's so expensive, and because the United States is trying to develop this Space Force and reestablish its space program, they're now going to contract with SpaceX and possibly with Boeing, with the private sector in general, for its space missions. And so this is the first of that. This will be the first time that astronauts go to space with a private company working with NASA. So it's historic a couple different aspects. And again, this will be the second attempt at it after the failed attempt on Wednesday.
How does the weather look today?
You know, it's in question. It looks better than it did on Wednesday. And, of course, there's this small window of launch. The window of opportunity is what they call it. That's happening this afternoon around 3:22. That's the launch time. If the weather holds up, which it looks like it could, then they'll be able to go. But they have to go at a certain amount of time in order to catch up with the International Space Station in orbit. That's what the window of opportunity is all about for launch. So there's a possibility that weather could cancel this thing again, but forecasters say it looks better than it did on Wednesday, but still some questionable clouds in the sky and some questionable activity later today.
And there is the expectation of a VIP to attend from Washington?
Yeah, you know, the president tweeted out the other day when the flight got canceled that he would be back. He went down to Cape Canaveral on Wednesday, didn't make any comments because the flight got canceled. So he said he'll see us back on Saturday. So the plan is for the president to return. And the thought is that he'll give remarks after this launch.
Clayton Neville, thank you so much for the coverage this morning, Clayton.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
You betcha. 7:30, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got the news next with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Outraged Americans took to the streets in dozens of cities last night protesting the killing of an unarmed black man by a white Minneapolis police officer Monday. Derek Chauvin has been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter after holding his knee on George Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes while Floyd was in custody and screaming he couldn't breathe. Correspondent Brian Todd was outside the White House last night.
They're doing chants like no justice, no peace, as we hear all across the country. Many of them start raising their hands and saying don't shoot. They have called out the names of many young African-American men who have died at the hands of police, and then repeating, say their names.
Furious protesters in Atlanta set a police car and American flags on fire, prompting outrage from Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms.
This is not the legacy of civil rights in America. This is chaos, and we're buying into it. This won't change anything.
As unrest spread, the Pentagon took the rare step yesterday of ordering the Army to put several active-duty U.S. military police units on the ready to deploy to Minneapolis. Some protesters were wearing masks as the pandemic continues. Meanwhile, a church in California filed an emergency appeal arguing the state's limits on attendance at services violated constitutional guarantees of religious freedom. Last night, the Supreme Court ruled against the church. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote, the limits, quote, appear consistent with the First Amendment. Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
Staying home, avoiding friends and family, wearing a mask everywhere you go. So much of our life has changed. Those precautions help, but if you get sick anyway, having untreated heart disease, diabetes, or even being overweight can affect how easily you recover. Fortunately, it's never too late to make the changes that can reduce your risk for serious illness. That's why you need the Princeton Longevity Center. Their caring experts give you the time, care, and attention you need. And with the latest preventive medicine technology, Princeton Longevity Center can find the health risks that a regular annual physical can miss. We all need to take precautions these days, but with private waiting rooms, personal protection for all our patients and staff, and ongoing disinfection, Princeton Longevity is committed to safeguarding your health in our offices. There will be good times again with friends and family. Take care of your health to be there for them with the Princeton Longevity Center. Call now, 888-8000-PLC. That's 888-8000-PLC, or go to PrincetonLongevityCenter.com.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Riverdale on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, traveling northbound at 410, you will find construction in the left lane, just a brief delay right now. Now also keep in mind in the district that the Suitland Parkway is closed for weekend road work between South Capitol Street and Firth Sterling Avenue. And also do be aware of a long-term work zone on southbound DC 295 at Pennsylvania Avenue. Your lanes are shifting to the left with a rough road surface in the area. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Yesterday's cold front, that is now a thing of the past. High pressure filters in today. Mostly sunny skies and lower humidity. High temperatures in the lower 80s. Tonight will be a little bit on the cooler side under clear skies. Lows in the 50s in the outlying suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, highs only in the lower 70s. Plenty of sunshine, low humidity. Overall, a great end to the weekend. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
You realize that volatility of the markets is reality in today's world of investing. But is your portfolio properly balanced to survive these nerve-wracking economic times? Hi, this is Simon Hamilton, co-host of the Wise Investor Show, heard every Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on WMAL. We manage investments for our clients, so give us a call. We think we can help.
Simon Hamilton and the Wise Investor Group are affiliated with Robert W. Baird & Company, Incorporated. To reach Simon, call 866-758-9473 or log on to thewiseinvestorgroup.com and resolve to become a better informed Wise Investor.
7:35, this is the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and he is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is also the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for being with us. And I wanted to talk to you about an article that you wrote. You know, we've heard so much about General Flynn. We've heard so much about Russian collusion, and Adam Schiff still has the evidence that he has yet to present to us. You've written an op-ed at the Daily Caller, The Six Facts Americans Were Never Supposed to Know About the Russia Collusion Hoax. Six things, Tony. What are they?
Well, the six things, I don't want to go through all because I don't have time, but all have to do with factual revelations regarding things like CrowdStrike. One of the most notable pins that the left has been using to try to say that the Russians were behind everything was this idea that the DNC server was hacked. It wasn't. Now we know that a company called CrowdStrike went in to look at the DNC server. They made a copy, what they call an image. Turns out that they can't even verify the Russians did it. And other things that relate to how at every point of the Russia collusion narrative, it all focused on Hillary Clinton paying for Fusion GPS to create, via Christopher Steele, a complete straw man, something that did not exist for purposes of establishing a national security investigation against the Trump administration. So I simply go through, Rick, and outline the things we now know. I actually was, this came up in my head after our last show when we were talking about Stalinist behavior. And so I went and did a few notes to myself about some of the things we talked about. So then I just kind of went through and recognized there were six facts now that were now established. And what I found interesting is the response to it. It's been positive, obviously, for us. I've seen the other side go back and try to dispute it by completely empty, oh, well, this is just not true, without giving facts. So, again, Rick, if people read the editorial, I try to be very precise. It's a very short editorial, but I try to be very precise in the language I use and very clear on what the facts are. And this is where I think people really need, I don't care who you are or what your political POV is, please read the article, judge for yourself what's really going on, because there's deeper problems regarding how the national security establishment of the country was subordinated to a political party, and neither side should have that part, that power. So,
and that's at thedailycaller.com, right. The six facts Americans were never supposed to know about the Russia collusion hoax, authored by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We're going to spend a lot of time with KT talking about the transcripts of the phone call between General Flynn and the Russian ambassador. But how did that strike you? Just a quick note on that from you.
Well, look, I was in a room when KT and Mike were making some of those calls back in December of 2016, and the call, Rick, to just put the most direct interpretation on it, was what was necessary. People need to remember that the Obama administration had spun up, again, based on what we know now, if you go back and look at my 6 points, we know that the Obama administration spun up the Russians. They were actually doing things to be both antagonistic and ruinous of the relationship. So the phone call reflects what was necessary at the time. Just settle down. That's what the call really says to the Russians. We're coming in. Let's relook this when we get in. That's not Logan Act. That's nothing more than a man, Mike Flynn, doing his job to say, hey, there's going to be a change of leadership. Just don't escalate. I don't know how else to put it. I don't see how anybody else is trying to interpret anything, but that's what it was. And that's the nature of what Flynn was doing. I'm sure KT will help illustrate that. But they were trying, the Trump team were trying to put the best possible foot forward to protect what was left of the relationship with Russia, now that we know the Obama administration used the Russians in an attempt to undermine the Trump transition.
If you're just joining us this morning, there's violence and protests across the country last night. There was a confrontation down in front of the White House between protesters and Secret Service officers in riot gear. In Minneapolis, more looting, more fires. They had an 8 o'clock curfew that was in place that pretty much was ignored. And the governor, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, held a press conference at 1:30 a.m. local time this morning. And, Tony, I want to play this for you because this is the description of the scene, and then I want to ask you about the role of the National Guard. And now President Sure. Trump has had the Pentagon issue get-ready orders to actually bring in the U.S. Army. So, first off, here's the governor of Minnesota describing it and explaining why there didn't seem to be any police presence last night.
Americans are watching on television as fires burn, buildings are looted, people of Minneapolis in danger, and they don't see the National Guard. They don't see law enforcement. I know you say they're out there, but people are not seeing them.
There's simply more of them than us, and the operation is so much broader. We are out there, I can assure you. They are in heated confrontations that are putting folks at risk. We are prioritizing those critical assets, and I know the heartbreak that brings to people when the business that you fought your life for to try and get burns down. That seems like a pretty damn critical asset to you. We're protecting the Federal Reserve. We're protecting those infrastructures downtown. We're protecting power stations and things like that, but they're out there. And as I said, this is the largest single deployment in the state's history. We ask people, we put a stay-at-home order in, and they don't give one damn about that. And they are out there now to cause as much damage as they can.
That is Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota early this morning. And, Tony, the National Guard is there. The National Guard also called out in Georgia because of the violence in Atlanta last night. Tell us a little bit about what the National Guard does and sort of who directs them. Is it the governor? Is it the local authorities? Does it come from the military? How does that work?
Yeah, very quickly, they're under something called Title 32 of the U.S. Code, and they're actually a state asset. The governor of the state controls the National Guard. As a matter of fact, in most states, there's a dual funding. I started out in 1981 as a private in the Ohio Army National Guard, so I went through National Guard training for the first part of my career. They're a dual-use asset. They are therefore the very thing they're being used for in Minneapolis, to essentially provide civil support to law enforcement in times of crisis like this. They're also there for disaster relief and assistance when storms come through and things like that. And they've been activated during the pandemic in places like New York to provide medical assistance. In this case, though, this is the most critical and I would argue the most dangerous part of their job as National Guard, to work under the governor, and they are directed by the governor in this case, to go in and secure territory within a U.S. city. The governor has been slow. They have not activated the guard to the maximum capacity. And simply put, I don't know what they're doing if they haven't secured the entire city. You can use a guard to do that. And I know Minneapolis. I spend time there. So I don't know what they're doing because they should have deployed these folks more rapidly and more extensively. And to differentiate them from the U.S. Army, the U.S. Army is a Title 10 force. That's U.S. Code Title 10. That reports to the President of the United States in the Pentagon. And basically, remember the authorities of the Army. It's very easy. Title 10 is basically anything George Washington and the Continental Army did, the U.S. Army can do today. And so that's kind of their mission, and that's how we distinguish the two. President Trump has moved U.S. forces into the region for two reasons, U.S. Army forces. First, if the Guard can't do it, the U.S. Army can be rolled in to assist. But there's limited roles that they can do during a crisis like this. They cannot play the same role as the Guard. And then more importantly...
Now, wait a minute. Clarify that. I want to get specific on that. So what can the Guard do that the U.S. Army can't do?
There's something called posse comitatus, which separates federal forces from Guard forces. Guard can actually engage in essentially law enforcement support to include arresting people and things like that. The Guard has been used to augment counter-drug operations in the past. technically there's a separation. I've actually had to testify to this in front of Arlen Specter years ago, where the separation is the U.S. military, federal military, cannot engage in those sorts of operations. Now, with certain emergency authorities, they could ask to be do that, but it would be extraordinary. The second role is that, Rick, I'm glad you asked that question, is what could the federal forces be used for? They could be used independently of the Guard if necessary. Remember the 1960s and civil rights issues, the Army was essentially, the Guard was transferred into a federal status, into Title X status, and they forced the states to allow blacks and minorities into certain schools. So the force can be used to do that. It's been rare, but that's why the U.S. Army is there now. Let's hope it doesn't come to any federal activation of those assets.
Well, for anybody that watched any of the coverage last night, there was very little police presence, if any, for hours in Minneapolis, and the governor did explain that they were covering other things. But basically, the governor said they were overwhelmed. They were outnumbered. He said they couldn't make arrests because it takes two or three officers to make an arrest, and they have to transport them, and they don't have the manpower.
It's just
unbelievable.
I don't believe it for a minute. They have the resources. It's a matter. I think this is a political decision they've made to not do an adequate response, and it's dangerous, and they need to get their forces properly organized.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, I appreciate the perspectives, as always. Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you, Rick.
You bet. Again, Tony's op-ed is at thedailycaller.com. And we're at 7:47. We'll be talking with KT McFarland. But first, we head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
In Maryland and Riverdale on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway northbound before 410, left lane closed with construction. Starting to see some slowdowns through that work zone. Also keep in mind in the district that the Suitland Parkway is closed for road work this weekend between South Capitol Street and Firth Sterling Avenue. And also do keep in mind that the off-ramp is closed in the long-term work zone northbound 295. At the ramp to Firth Sterling Avenue, so do keep that in mind. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine on this Saturday. We will see falling levels of humidity with dew points back in the 50s by this afternoon. Highs today into the lower 80s. Tonight clear and comfortably cool. Lows in the 50s in the suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. Sunday, more of the same. Sunny with low humidity. Highs cooler in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
68 degrees, 7:48 on the Saturday morning update.
Stuck at home?
Yes.
Depend on WMAL for information as we get through the corona crisis together.
I just want you to know what a breath of fresh air you people are.
Listen on your smart speaker, home computer, or the WMAL app. 105.9 FM WMAL.
Hey everyone, Laura from Garden Answer. If you want your yard to really shine, just look for the shrubs in the white Proven Winners containers at your garden center. They've been thoroughly tested and handpicked in order to give you a carefree, colorful yard with a whole lot less effort on your part. I trust Proven Winter shrubs, and you can too. They've got lilacs, hydrangeas, roses, and all your favorites. And they come in a wide range of color and sizes, making them really great for all gardens. Make life colorful and easy with Proven Winter's flowering shrubs.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and she is the former Deputy National Security Advisor. She worked very closely with General Michael Flynn and the Trump administration. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, for people that may not be regular listeners, they may not know what happened to you, and the controversy over General Flynn and his conversation with the Russian ambassador in December of 2016, it created a controversy. There was the whole Russia collusion hoax. The incoming director of national intelligence, along with Rick Grenell, who was the interim DNI, they have declassified transcripts of phone calls between General Flynn and the Russian ambassador. And again, these took place during the transition. You were there. The controversy that ensued resulted in you leaving the White House because you were General Flynn's deputy national security advisor. The whole Flynn controversy and the Russia hoax controversy impacted and then derailed your subsequent nomination to be the ambassador to Singapore. So when you read the transcripts that were released yesterday, what was your reaction?
I was so angry I had a hard time controlling myself, if you want to know the truth. I've not seen those transcripts before, and I was General Flynn's deputy. I was an integral part of the transcripts because they occurred when it was during the transition. It was the day that President Obama imposed sanctions on the Russians for election interference, and I was in Mar-a-Lago with President-elect Trump while my boss, General Flynn, was in the Dominican Republic on a vacation. And General Flynn had a phone call with the Russian ambassador. I talked to General Flynn immediately before the phone call and immediately after the phone call. And when I talked to General Flynn before the call, I said, General Flynn, we've had a long history of sanctions back and forth between the U.S. and the Russians. They do something we don't like. We kick some of their diplomats out, or we sanction some of their economic entities. They retaliate by doing the same thing. It's done. Sometimes they retaliate less than we've done, not as a reciprocal level, but less than reciprocal, sometimes more. And the problem with it, if they do more, is that then we will have to come back and have a tit-for-tat back and forth, and we could have a full-blown crisis, a U.S.-Russia crisis, on the day President Trump takes office. All of that, General Flynn understood. He talked to the Russian ambassador about a number of things, but made the point, look, don't escalate this. And at the end of Flynn's phone call with the Russian ambassador, he called me back and he said, you know, I think we're going to be okay. So I assumed, as did everybody else, that that meant the crisis averted. Good thing. Well, the whole Russia investigation, the whole collusion delusion, was on the basis of that phone call. And the intelligence community wiretapped him. They knew what was the transcript was that was released last night. Nobody's seen it other than some Washington Post reporters and the people in the intelligence community and the Obama administration. But in that phone call, there was no deal cut. There was no promise of a quid pro quo. There was nothing improper in the slightest of General Flynn's conversation with the Russian. And yet, the intelligence community, the Mueller investigation, all of this was predicated on Flynn had cut some kind of a deal. Flynn had done something wrong. Flynn could be prosecuted under the Obscure Logan Act, which doesn't even apply. It was all made up. They knew from the very beginning, because they had the transcript, they knew there was nothing there. But they proceeded with it anyway, and they dragged the country through 3 years of division. They destroyed General Flynn. They cratered my career, and they tried to get, it was all about not Flynn, not K.T. McFarland. It was all about stopping Donald Trump from what he was elected to do, which was to drain the swamp. Why? Because they were the swamp. They are the swamp.
Well, Senator Grassley released a statement that said he reviewed the transcripts. He didn't see anything wrong with the calls. Was there anything that you've seen in the transcripts that would not be expected in a call from an incoming national security advisor to an ambassador of a key country in the world?
No. In fact, just the opposite. The Obama administration decided to impose these sanctions just 3 weeks before Trump took office. Now, they could have done it weeks before. They could have done it before the election. They knew there was election interference. Why wait until the very last minute? I think it's because they wanted to present Trump with a crisis on day one. President Trump had promised during the campaign he was going to improve relations with Russia if he could, and they wanted to make sure they sabotaged that. And when Putin, the Russian president, didn't take the bait, he didn't escalate, there wasn't a crisis, then they got really mad. And on January 5th, we now know from released handwritten notes and from Susan Rice's memorandum to herself that when the Russians didn't respond, when they didn't take the bait, when they didn't escalate, when they didn't cause a crisis, that's when the Obama administration and the senior intelligence officials doubled down and they decided, well, we're just going to go ahead with a collusion fraud, hoax, whatever you want to call it. So not only was there nothing wrong with the phone call, if Flynn had not had that phone call and we had had a U.S.-Russia crisis, that's malpractice in foreign policy. You try to avoid conflict. You try to avoid crises. And General Flynn, when presented with a potential crisis, did what he should do.
He tried to avoid, and he did avoid that crisis, although he brought hell raining down on everything else. Not, I mean, he didn't, but they decided to respond that way.
We've got 5 minutes left, and I want to talk about your opinion piece. It's at foxnews.com. You just issued it late this week. Obama's shocking abuse of power. Here's what we know so far, and of course it is all themed to the Russia hoax. What do we know so far? And I think it's intriguing that you say so far, because that leads me to believe there will be more.
There will be more. What happens normally in a crisis like this, where an agency abuses its power or individuals do, you know, the head of the agency kind of sweeps another rug and says, well, we've gotten rid of the bad guys, nothing more to see here, move along. And I think that's what the FBI Director Wray was doing for the first 3 years. But now there have been so many documents released. It's such a big deal. The evidence is so irrefutable. And it's not based on anonymous sources. It's based on handwritten notes. It's based on emails, text messages, memoranda for the record. So now it can't be just brushed under the rug. And because Rick Grenell chose to, and the new deputy, new director of national intelligence, followed through with releasing these transcripts, President Trump promised to me personally, I'm not going to let this go away. I'm going to get to the bottom of it. The attorney general has now appointed three U.S. attorneys to investigate various aspects of this. So I think it will all eventually come out. I think people will be held responsible. It doesn't help General Flynn. It doesn't help me. It doesn't bring back those three lost years for the Trump administration. But at least we can prevent these kinds of abuses from happening again, because otherwise they will. You know, we've given our intelligence community enormous power. And it was a good thing, because they were supposed to track down terrorists, but they've abused it, and they've used it to go after political enemies.
So Vladimir Putin's a pretty smart cookie. How would you assess how he played the Obama administration?
I think he played everybody. So the Obama administration imposes sanctions to create a crisis between the United States and Russia on the eve of Trump's inauguration. And Vladimir Putin, I think, saw this and wasn't going to let it go to waste. It's a good crisis. So what does he do? As soon as the sanctions are announced, the Russian foreign minister comes out and says, Russia reserves that we're going to retaliate. It's our right. We're going to retaliate. That sits around for a day. And then President Putin swoops in and he says, no, I'm overruling my foreign minister. I'm not going to stoop to the level of kitchen diplomacy and kitchen politics and pettiness. I'm going to rise above it. I'm going to wait until the new president comes into office. So what has Putin done by that? Three things. First, he's shown himself, he's averted a crisis, which he didn't want at all, because he had much more to lose by a perpetuation of bad relations with the U.S. than we did with him. And he's avoided the crisis. He has managed to humiliate Obama by calling him petty. He's managed to himself rise, it look like he's a great statesman, and he's going to rise above this pettiness. And finally, he'd gotten brownie points with the incoming administration, that here's the great Putin. He's avoided a crisis that Obama sort of laid a trap for them, and he's avoided it. Therefore, you know, he starts out a relationship with President Trump on a different footing. Now, none of that works because of the collusion delusion and the Mueller investigation and all the rest. But that, I think, was Putin's original plan. He kind of won three ways.
KT McFarland, and you can read her opinion piece at foxnews.com. It's entitled Russia Hoax, Obama Team's Shocking Abuse of Power. Here's what we know so far. And you can also read KT's book, because she lays out so much of what happened in the White House, what she went through. It's all in the book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Of course, you can get it at Amazon. And if you want to get it quickly, you can get the Kindle edition. KT, as always, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for such a complete description of what was going on from the inside.
Thank you.
That does it for the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you very much for being with us. We've got the 8 o'clock news coming up next with Heather Curtis, and then it's Garden Sense on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.